planning for what had been the unthinkable with Greece and the euro. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. European finance ministers are meeting in Brussels today to try for a path forward for Greece, which wants an extension on its EU financial lifeline. There are some optimistic signals coming from Germany overnight. At the same time, a German magazine is reporting the European Central Bank now has plans to keep the rest of the eurozone together if Greece falls out. In other words, contingency planning. On Fridays, we check in with Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Hello there, Chris.
Good morning, David.
You know, there was a time that European authorities used to say that a country leaving the eurozone was so unthinkable they didn't even plan for it. Seems like they're planning for the unthinkable now.
The finance minister of Malta, this roughly tennis court-sized country in the middle of Europe, has leaked to the press that if Greece wants to go, Germany and others will let them go.
Now, Greece would be disruptive enough, but there's a move from the left in Spain gaining popularity in which the Spanish might someday demand debt relief of their own.
I think that's a big part of what the Germans and other creditor nations are thinking about in their negotiations with Greece. Either Greece is going to stay in with only the very smallest concessions, or Greece is going to be forced out of the euro. And if they are, it's in Germany and other creditors' best interest, since they will be taking a loss, to make it as painful an exit as possible.
Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Shanghai is the financial heart of China, and even though growth is slowing there, the economy grew 7% last year. Its population is about 23 million, and it's now been decades with the cranes putting up skyscraper after skyscraper. That has been good for architects, including American architects. Marketplace's David Gura filed this report from Shanghai.
The Huangpu River curves through Shanghai on its way to the East China Sea, and architect William Pollock is sitting on its western bank on what's called the Bund. There's a wide promenade and
a series of about 28 buildings from the early 20th century, mostly constructed between 1910 and 1930.
Classical-looking columns, a lot of gray stone, and they couldn't look more different from what's across the river in a part of Shanghai called Pudong.
The new city, the new district, and it's where all the super high-rise buildings are.
William Pollock left the U.S. 4 years ago to head the architecture firm HOK's China practice. He says in Shanghai, there's so much that's new.
It's the greatest place to be on Earth, I think.
Dan Winey has been in Shanghai for more than a decade. At a time when critics lament the sameness of new architecture here, China offers opportunities to be bold, Winey says. He and his colleagues designed the Shanghai Tower, which is scheduled to open in a few months.
Too often, I think the building is looked at as being simply the second tallest building in the world.
Which it is, but the head of the tower's design team, Jun Shaw, points out how innovative it is. It has this standout curved shape.
Asymmetric. That's very important.
And Shaw, who was born in Shanghai but studied and practiced in the U.S. before he moved back home, says air is cleaned in a giant pocket between the building's windows and another glass facade that hangs from cables and moves with the wind.
The glass skin, they just like a silk dress.
He said silk dress. It's more like Armani suit.
China's growth has been slowing, but that doesn't seem to faze American architects like William Pollock.
7% growth is still a lot of growth.
He sees the slowdown as an opportunity to refocus on architecture that could tackle some of China's biggest problems, including air pollution. Architects could pioneer solutions in China that they could bring back to the U.S. I'm David Gura from Marketplace.
The Oscars are Sunday, and it's been interesting to watch the nominated feature documentaries through the prism of the business beat. Citizen 4 and the privacy debate Edward Snowden touched off is affecting Silicon Valley and beyond. I'm told the Salgado Vim Vendors documentary opens with famous stills of a dehumanizing Brazilian gold mine. There's a legal fight now over the photos in the Finding Vivian Maier film. And then there's the film Virunga, about conflict, endangered gorillas, and a British company, Soco, which wants to look into oil in a national park in Congo. BBC business reporter Russell Padmore.
You can see the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo is thinking about the economy, but of course the campaigners do point out that there are other ways of helping the economy by using the park tourism, for example, and generating other areas of industry such as the electricity sector for the park. Now, in defense of Soko, they've actually said they won't drill in the region unless they get exact permission to go ahead. They have carried out some sort of surveys. That's what got everyone worried. Now, this is a UN heritage area. UNESCO, if it does change its mind, then Soko might be allowed to explore for oil in the region.
Now, Russell spoke with one of the film's protagonists, park director Emmanuel de Merode.
I mean, there's a great expansion of oil in the region, and you know, much of that industry is developing and is in the interest of the peoples of that region if it's done properly. But of course, for it to be done properly, it has to be legal. In the case of Virunga National Park, we have a British company that's made the decision to enter the park for the exploration of oil, and unfortunately under Congolese law that's not permitted. So that's been a great confrontation for the law enforcement authority under very, very difficult conditions.
Now, the documentary keeps this on the down low, but in addition to everything else, de Merode there is also a nobleman, a Belgian prince. Virunga is on Netflix. Vivian Maier and The Last Days of Vietnam are on iTunes, among other places. Citizen 4 and Salt of the Earth are tougher to see before the Oscar telecast, although you might get lucky with Citizen 4 if you're in a big city. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.